On Memorial Day, Americans honor the thousands of fellow Americans killed in war, nearly 6,700 in Iraq and Afghanistan. Of course, thousands more men and women survived, but with deep physical and mental wounds, and their struggles have been well documented. Not so much those who came home from World War II, the greatest generation. The image we've always had of them is that they fought heroically, then came home and cheerfully lived out their lives in the Roaring Fifties. Well, author Thomas Childers shatters that myth in his book, Soldier from the War Returning, The Greatest Generation's Troubled Homecoming from World War II. There were 16 million returning vets, 7,000 of them waiting for hospital beds in 1946. 500,000 disability claims went unanswered. The GI Bill helped, but unemployment for vets was 3 times that of civilians. Thomas Childers, professor of history at the University of Pennsylvania, tells stories of World War II veterans living in cars and chicken coops, a couple even sleeping in a department store window. We spoke in 2009. Professor, you trace the lives of 3 soldiers and their families and how the war affected them. There was Michael Gold, a navigator whose plane was shot down. He was a POW. His 2 parents and younger brother waited for him in New Jersey. There was Willis Allen. He lost both legs. His wife, Grace, and his toddler, Judy, moved to be near him in Atlantic City and later in D.C. when he came home and recovered. And then this gets personal. Because the third couple, your own father, Tom, and your mom, Mildred, briefly married before he left for 2 years. He was stationed at an air base. What did he do in the war, you know, as the line goes?
Well, my dad was in the 8th Air Force, the 390th Bomb Group, a B-17 outfit, but he was he worked on the ground. He was not a flyer. He had a very as safe a job as one could have and still be in a combat zone.
And yet, you describe, and the book gets very graphic, and I'm so glad that it does, because we sort of need to hear what really happened to many of these men. Your father would see the planes return, often when with brains splattered across them, and without the people he had sent out.
That's right. When he first went, like so many boys, really, men of that generation, he saw the war almost as a sort of romantic experience. Here he was, an ocean voyage. He's in England. He goes to London, to Cambridge. But that didn't last. Every day he would go out when the planes took off for their missions and watch the planes take off. And then in the afternoon when they returned, he would be there, as all the men on the ground would be, to watch to see how many of the planes made it back. Almost every time they went out, some planes didn't make it back. And even for some that did, there would be really grisly things, men who had lost an arm, a head blown off in the cockpit. He saw all of this. He had a close friend, a guy named Fatty Means from Illinois. And Fatty was a radio operator on one of the planes. He had flown 24 missions. He had one last mission to fly, to complete his tour of duty of 25. Only about 30% of flyers actually succeeded in doing that in 1943-44. So everything was ready for Fatty to return from this 25th mission. His plane made it back, but Fatty had been killed by a shell over Berlin. And I think for my father, that was a real turning point. There was no more romance to the war. And after that, he simply stopped making friends among the men who flew.
Yeah. And then, as we said, Michael Gold, more than a year as a POW, and Willis Allen, losing both legs. All 3 men come back to this America that we described, not enough jobs, moving in with relatives, trying to overcome disabilities, and hearing people thinking they're not the same. What is the phrase that starts to come up?
He was never the same after the war. There was a young man in my hometown, small town outside of Chattanooga, who wandered the streets, sun up to sundown, day after day, season after season. He would walk from telephone pole to telephone pole, placing his hand up on that silver oval plaque that's on all telephone poles, and looking at it as if it held some special communication for him. Then he'd proceed to the next one and the next one and the next one, all the way through town. My mother would always say when we saw him, I was a little boy at the time, would say, well, that's Mr. Westerberg, such a bright boy. He was never the same after the war. And nobody knows exactly what happened. I mean, there are a lot of stories about what happened to him. But I discovered later when I began doing this book that he had been the valedictorian of the local high school in 1937, and he had gone away a golden boy and come back a ghost.
Yeah. You mentioned your mother. There's another scene, and I can't remember which of the wives' mothers it was. A child comes across the mother after a horrific fight because all of these men start to inexplicably explode in rage and violence and anger. And the mothers develop their own battle fatigue, and the kids, some of them, say they feel like POWs. What starts to happen in the families after these men return?
All three of these men, I should say, were men who were not paralyzed by the war. That is, they didn't wind up in VA hospitals. They were men who had outwardly conformed to all of those generalizations we have about the greatest generation. They all came back, they had families, they built successful careers, and so on. But their war leached out in all kinds of corrosive ways. Mike Gold, who was a brilliant OBGYN, went to medical school when he got out of the Army using the GI Bill.
He'd been the POW, yep.
He'd been a POW for 15 months, and as a Jewish POW in Germany, this was a particularly harrowing experience. He almost starved to death in the prisoner of war camp. When he returned, he picked up, got his medical degree, had a family, a very successful practice in New Jersey, but he was subject to the family and to others, absolutely inexplicable bursts of rage, often triggered by food. A child who wouldn't eat all of his lima beans, or something like a candy bar not coming out of a dispenser, discovering that they didn't have shrimp at the Howard Johnson's on the New Jersey Turnpike, and absolutely lowering the boom on some unsuspecting waiter or waitress.
Or machine. He smashed the glass on the vending machine. He dumped a bowl of food on top of his own toddler's head. These are the pictures you didn't see in Life or Look magazines.
No, not at all. And one of the other men that I follow, Willis Allen, the man who lost both of his legs. And I have to say, he lost his legs above the knee, with only a few inches of leg extending down from his hip. So, I mean, really a very, very severe handicap and wound. Willis, when I knew him, he was my best friend's father and lived a couple of doors down. By day, was just a terrific guy. He was handsome. He was funny. He was very talented. But at night, something would set him off. He became, I think, jealous of his wife, wondering why she wasn't home. Something would set him off, and my friend Gary and I and Judy, his older sister, simply learned we moved a dresser over in front of the door to make sure that he couldn't get in.
Thomas Childers, his book is Soldier from the War, Returning the Greatest Generation's Troubled Homecoming from World War II. So when we come back, what happened to the men he writes about? That's in 1 minute, Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back. On this Memorial Day, we're revisiting a conversation with University of Pennsylvania history professor Thomas Childers. His book, Soldier from the War Returning, The Greatest Generation's Troubled Homecoming from World War II, follows the stories of three vets, including his own father. It's a history that's largely been airbrushed from our national memory, but there are a few reminders. Here's a scene from the 1946 movie, The Best Years of Our Lives, starring the great Harold Russell, a real veteran who lost two hands to the war. In the film, his character encounters a man who says the U.S. was suckered into World War II.
I've seen a ship go down and over 400 of my shipmates went with it. Were those guys suckers?
That's the unpleasant truth.
Ooh, if I only had my hands.
You put those down!
Thomas Childers, your premise is that the public soon lost interest in these veterans and turned its attention to the communist threat, but that your research really touched a nerve.
When I began doing this work, there was literally nothing about this. And as the Philadelphia Inquirer did a story and it was syndicated nationally, I was deluged with people from all over the country writing, saying, my family went through this. My father was never the same, and also said that comment, he was never the same after the war, was something heard over and over and over again. And so I thought this was a story that ought to be told. If, for example, we had had some better understanding that the costs of war in human terms are always the same, it doesn't matter whether it's a so-called good war or a bad one. I mean, I think for so long we assumed that Vietnam was bad war, bad outcome, bad after effects. And then we have to learn all over again, it seems, in Iraq and Afghanistan, that lo and behold, we have veterans coming back, women now as well as men, who are having all of these same troubles that we associated with Vietnam. And in fact, they were all there before in the so-called good war. So what seems to me is that the message is that there may be times when it's necessary to send men into harm's way, but the cost is colossal and the suffering doesn't stop when the shooting does.
Well, Michael Gold, the former POW you write about, becomes part of a wave of World War II vets who get treatment for PTSD in their 70s and 80s. Willis Allen, who lost both legs, pretty much destroyed his family, violent fights with his wife, toppling to the floor from his wheelchair, crawling after her. She would taunt him, sometimes strike back, smashing him over the head with a hammer. But what happened to Tom and Mildred, your mom and dad, was more nuanced. Tell us.
He came back to a family that was deep in grief. His brother-in-law, my mother's brother, Howard, was a flyer in the 8th Air Force and had been killed in the last American bomber shot down over Germany in the war. I'd written a book about this called Wings of Mourning. My father came home, and after desperately wanting to see his wife to celebrate his survival, came back to a family that was overwrought with grief. He understood the terrible calculus of war and the probability of casualties, and he had become coarsened to it, to put it bluntly. I mean, this was simply, you couldn't dwell on it. When he came back, this attitude shone through, and my mother was quite unhappy with him.
Well, and also it eclipsed any opportunity he might have had to talk, because how could he complain? Because he came back.
That's right. And then I think for her, there was something else. And that was that in those initial weeks that he was home from the war, she discovered a letter which she thought was evidence that he had had an affair with an English woman. He denied it. She would not believe his denial. So somehow, in her thinking, these two things were wires that crossed. And I think in my family, unlike the Golds and the Allens, it was my mother who had PTSD about the war. And at one point, my mother, in the throes of anguish, yelled at him, "Why have you come back and Howard didn't?" And it was a sentence that hung over their marriage for the rest of their lives.
Well, and they stayed together for decades, although there would be very low points and high points, very high points. They did extraordinarily well. They had the country club circuit at one point, but then he borrowed money, went into debt at another point. So they yo-yoed up and down. But I guess my question for you, through all of this, did anyone ever talk about what happened in the war?
No. My father told stories, but they were always funny stories. He never, ever, for example, mentioned Fatty Means, this close friend of his, whose body my father had taken to the military cemetery in Cambridge for burial. I was at a reunion of the 390th Bomb Group. My father wasn't there. And two of his old buddies said, "Tom must have told you about Fatty." And I said, "What?" I went back and said to my dad, I said, "These guys told me about Fatty Means." And he never said a word about it. He just said, "Yeah."
And that was, of course, the friend that he sent off on a plane and never returned. Your dad dies of a heart ailment. And I wondered, Thomas Childers, there's a couple paragraphs at the end of the book after the funeral. And you'd think, this is something, again, nobody in the family ever talked about. And a lot of us have a lot of pain over this, that we never really sat down and mined these stories. But who knows if our parents could have responded, even if we wanted to. But this is decades after the war, decades after the war. Could you read these couple of paragraphs after your dad's funeral?
The limousine from the funeral home carried Mildred, that's my mother, and her son back to the house and to the small collection of close friends who were waiting for them there. As they passed through the stone gates of the cemetery and down into town, she stared through the dark glass of the window, her features as frozen as the cemetery earth. They rode in frosty silence, lost in their own thoughts. Then, apropos of nothing, she said, as much to herself as to him, "He was never the same after the war." Those were the only words that passed between them on the solemn ride home. In those last dwindling years of the 20th century, 1,000 veterans of the Second World War were dying each day, an entire generation passing. And how many times each day, he wondered, were his mother's words being echoed as families folded the flags and said their final farewells, watching in mournful silence the coffins holding their veteran husbands, fathers, uncles, and brothers being lowered into the grave, their war over at last.
Thomas Childers. His book is Soldier from the Home Returning, The Greatest Generation's Troubled Homecoming from World War II. By the way, on the subject of fathers and sons and war, producer Alex Ashluck has a lovely essay at hereandnow.org, and he'll have an update on the father who drives his son's truck later, Here and Now.